This is the Everything Financial Radio program. I am your host, Dennis Tubergen. Welcome back. If you're a regular listener, if you are a new listener, this is where we talk about what's going on in the economy and what it might mean for you and your money. I have joining me once again on today's program our special guest expert, Mr. Harry Dent. Harry is a best-selling author many times over and does much of his economic research based on demographics. I know you're going to enjoy the conversation that I had with Harry this past week. I also want to remind you that we do have some free educational resources that we're making available. We do have our new retirement rules class. The new retirement rules class is held on a Saturday. Our next one won't be until September 12th, and that date is already quickly filling up. The class will be held at the downtown campus of Western Michigan University. It will begin at 9 a.m. and conclude at 2:30 p.m. The cost for the class is just $49. That's for you and a guest, the book, all the handouts, and lunch for you and a guest. All the information is available at the website, newretirementrules.com. You can also sign up there. We also have a Social Security Maximization Dinner Seminar. The dinner that we provide is complimentary, so these meetings fill up quickly. You can get more information at socialsecuritydinner.com. SocialSecurityDinner.com. We've got a meeting coming up on August the 18th, another one on August the 25th. We talk about Social Security maximization. And on today's program, in the fourth segment, I'll be talking about how solvent is Social Security. So if you're collecting Social Security or about to or thinking about it or hope to, you'll want to stay tuned and listen to the fourth segment of today's program. So again, that resource for the free Social Security Maximization Dinner Seminar is socialsecuritydinner.com. I'm pleased to have as a returning guest on the Everything Financial Radio program, Mr. Harry Dent. Harry is the author of The Demographic Cliff. He's also the editor of the free newsletter, The Economy and Markets. We'll get more about the book momentarily. Harry is the author of several best-selling books, and you've probably seen him on television commenting on the markets. And, Harry, welcome back to the program.
Yeah, nice to be back, Dennis.
Harry, when you take a look at what's happened recently in the stock markets, one can only think of one term, and that is volatility. Where's all this going?
Well, you know, I think something important happened. We have always said when bubbles, you know, burst, they burst. They don't correct. And China just saw a 35% crash in a little over 3 weeks, and it would have been much more than that if the government in China hadn't stepped in with tens and tens of billions of dollars to prop up the market, and they're still doing that. I think this is the beginning of the end, that we've been saying China is the biggest bubble in modern history. It has the largest real estate bubble by far of any major country in the world. China has overbuilt, you know, just tens and tens and tens of millions of empty condos and then empty whole cities and then infrastructures and empty malls and office buildings. I mean, China has consistently for the last 10 to 30 years, really for 30 years, but especially in the last 10 to 12, has just overbuilt everything and created a huge bubble, moved, you know, hundreds of millions of people with no skills from rural areas into urban areas, and now they're trapped in these cities. And so that we've been saying China's going to be the biggest trigger for the next crash, because it's something that the Federal Reserve and the ECB can't really do anything about. If that bubble blows, the Chinese have so much of their wealth. They save way more than we do, 50% for the average person, 70% for the top 10% of people in that country. They save way more money than us, and they put almost all of it in real estate, whereas we put it more in stocks and bonds. So that real estate bubble is going to cause an implosion of wealth, and China's going to go down hard. So we've been waiting for a sign, and this stock market crash was the first sign. We've also seen, I think, Germany's market has topped. It's now 10% off its highs. Germany is supposedly holding up Europe, and yet we know a dirty secret nobody knows, that we knew about the Japanese in the late 80s. They have the worst demographic trends of any country in the world over the next 8 years. And so, you know, to see Germany starting to crack, Greece coming back into, you know, default or near default, you know, I think things are just starting to happen, and I think that central banks are going to lose control of the economy. They've been able to prop it up and keep pumping money and keep the markets going up. But I think we've been saying ultimately something will go wrong, and then this major bubble around the world in stock and in real estate will burst, and it will be much bigger than 2008.
So, Harry, let's go back and just comment a little bit on China. There was Kissinger still is a saying that the United States sneezes economically speaking and the world catches a cold. Wouldn't that be true of China now with their economy? When you look at it on a purchasing power parity basis, their economy is about the size of the U.S. from the information I've read. What effect will this bubble bursting in China have on the United States and the rest of the world?
Well, it's huge, Dennis, and the biggest impact will not be on us, but on emerging countries. We've been saying for years that the stealth crisis that nobody's been talking about hasn't just been the bubbles in real estate and stocks and all this printing money. It's been the steady fall of commodity prices. China is not only the second largest economy in the world, it's the fastest growing by far. It's grown as high as 10 to 12% and supposedly 7% recently, even though I don't believe those figures. But China accounts for 40 to 50% of the industrial and energy kind of commodities in the world. So they're this massive manufacturing machine, and when they slow down, commodity prices go down, and when commodity prices go down, emerging countries go down. Brazil's stock market is down 60%. The emerging markets index is down like 40% from the top and about to break some important support. So it'll have a huge impact on emerging countries and their growth. And the second thing is that China's wealthy are leading. They're trying to get their money. I mean, almost all these people trying to move out of China, they don't trust their government, they don't trust the bubble there, and they know they're going to get hit when it happens. So what they do is they say, hey, guess what, we're moving to California, we're moving to London, we're moving to Vancouver to get our kids in a good English-speaking college or university. And what they're really doing is buying the most expensive real estate they can find in those cities to launder their money and get it out of their country, because legally they can only pull $50,000 in cash. But of course, nobody's going to tell you when you move to San Francisco that you can't buy a condo or a home. So they're driving this real estate bubble around the world. And boy, I mean, the same thing happened in the early 90s when the Japanese, they were the rich up-and-coming country back then that was growing, and then they had a real estate bubble, and they used the wealth from that real estate bubble to buy real estate everywhere else. So the Chinese are doing the same thing. So we're going to see domino effect of real estate markets going down when the China bubble burst. So China, you're right, I mean, is number one indicator we're watching. We say the stock market's going to keep crashing in the next several months, and then at some point their economy is going to slow down substantially, and then their real estate bubble is going to burst, and then it's game over globally.
So, Harry, when you take a look at this, and let's expand on this, and let me just remind the listeners, if you're just joining us, we're chatting today with Harry Dent, and Harry is the author of The Demographic Cliff. He's also the editor of the free newsletter, Economy and Markets. And Harry, we've got about 2 minutes, a little bit more than that left. When you say that China's real estate bubble is likely going to burst, and it looks like maybe that has started, do you think that the United States real estate market is due for an encore performance of what we saw about 10 years ago?
Yes. I think we're going to see another crash. I've studied bubbles up and down, and we got a whole chapter on it in the book, Chapter 5. But bubbles not only always burst, but when they burst, they tend to go back to where the bubble started or a bit lower than that. The real estate bubble started in January of 2000 when the tech bubble peaked and started to fall off. And our real estate went up 1.3 times, okay, 130%. China's real estate since that time has gone up 680%. Great, I mean, makes our bubble look like nothing. So China's got a lot farther to fall, but so do we. Just to go back to January of 2000, when the bubble started, we would have to see real estate down 55% from the top. It only went down 34% in the last correction, so we've got a lot more to go. I think real estate is going to fall 40% from where it is now, and it is going to end up being 55, maybe 65% down at the top. This is going to leave a lot of people with negative equity, as we saw in, you know, after 2008. Only this is going to be much more this time. So it's when a real estate bubble bursts, it's much worse than a stock bubble. You know, because we had the tech bubble. bubble burst in early 2000, all we had was a very minor recession. This is going to cause a depression, the deepest downturn we've seen since the 1930s, because, you know, mortgages fail when housing prices goes down, and banks fail, and then people get trapped in their house and underwater in their negative, their equity. So this is serious stuff.
Well, we're going to continue our conversation with Mr. Harry Dent when Everything Financial Radio returns. And Harry also is making an offer of a free copy of his book, The Demographic Cliff. We'll tell you how to get that when Everything Financial Radio returns as well. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Everything Financial Radio program. I'm your host, Dennis Tubergen. I will be continuing my conversation with our special guest today, Mr. Harry Dent, in the next segment. You know, this past week, the Federal Reserve, or to be more accurate, the Federal Open Market Committee met and elected not to raise interest rates once again, as we have been talking about here on the Everything Financial Radio program for some time. And I want to give you just a bit from their July 29 press release. In that press release, it begins by saying, "Information received since the Federal Open Market Committee met in June indicates that economic activity has been expanding moderately in recent months. Growth in household spending has been moderate, and the housing sector has shown additional improvement. However, business fixed investment and net exports stayed soft." Let's look at the areas that did well, according to the Fed's press release. The housing sector was one area that the Fed said was strong. Going back to what we talk about when we discuss the concept of economic seasons, housing is doing well because housing is really debt-driven consumption. A couple months ago here on the program, I talked about the fact that there was an article published in the Wall Street Journal titled "The Return of the 3% Mortgage," the return of the 3% down mortgage. Little or no money down mortgages are back, makes it easier for folks to buy homes. In fact, when you take a look at the level of debt that is now being added in the housing sector, we believe that this is purely a debt-driven area of consumption. The other area that the Fed says is doing quite well is household spending. Again, debt-driven consumption. Now, there is a Reuters article that was published this past week, actually one day after the Fed's press release came out. And the Reuters article began by talking about the fact that U.S. economic growth accelerated in the second quarter as solid consumer spending offset the drag from weak business spending on equipment. That is actually right out of the Fed's press release. The article says that suggests that the Federal Reserve could be closer to hiking interest rates this year. I will go on record as saying that they will not do it in September, as many are predicting. I have made that same prediction earlier this year, as a lot of analysts said that the Fed would raise rates by summer. Well, now that's not happening, and I predict that won't happen in September either, for reasons that I will talk about. What I really want to focus on, though, is the measure of economic growth, because the Reuters article talks about the fact, and I'm quoting again from the article, "Gross domestic product expanded at a 2.3% annual rate." That's according to the Commerce Department. First quarter GDP, or gross domestic product, previously was reported as to have shrunk at a 0.2% pace, was now revised to show that it was rising at a 0.6% rate. Now, why did this revision happen? Why did the reported level of economic growth go from negative economic growth or contraction to positive economic growth, even though it was only a 0.6% rate? But that's a big swing. Why did this happen? Well, there was a blog written by Mr. Dave Kranzier that I thought did a nice job explaining this. And I am going to give you a bit of a paraphrase from Mr. Kranzier's writing here. He started by saying, I guess the new policy regarding the presentation of economic data that has been implemented by the government is if you don't like the way data is reported, you change the way data is reported or you change the methodology by which you gather the data. He continues by saying, after all, the media will zero in on the newly fabricated statistics, rather strong language, and that will become the Orwellian truth. Besides, the public doesn't care. Now, you know something has changed by the government when the press release announcing the results contains several paragraphs explaining how the revisions work. Now, let me give you an example of this press release. A new aggregate, in other words, a new metric, a new measuring stick. The average of GDP and GDI is a supplemental measure of U.S. economic activity. In real or inflation-adjusted terms, this measure increased 0.5% in the first quarter of 2015. So that's how this 0.2% real decline in GDP is now considered to be a 0.6% gain. Now, when you look at the other data, it's hard to figure out how there was really an economic gain in the first quarter. In fact, when you take a look at factory orders and retail sales, which make up the majority of gross domestic product, and when you think about factory orders and retail sales, another way to talk about that is manufacturing and consumption. Those are the two components of gross domestic product except for government spending. Well, factory orders have been declining since early to mid-2014, and they've declined to levels not seen since 2008 at the financial crisis. When you look at consumption, the year-over-year retail sales number also declined. So if those two numbers declined, how can you possibly have negative economic growth or consumption revised to show that there was actually economic growth? And the answer is that the metric is changed. The metric has changed. This has happened time and time again whenever economic data doesn't look as good as maybe someone would like it to look. The unemployment rate has changed significantly over the years. I should say the way the unemployment rate is calculated has changed significantly over the years. It used to be if you were working part-time but wanted to work full-time, you were considered to be unemployed. You were counted among those who were unemployed. If you weren't working, you were considered to be unemployed. Now, if you've quit looking for a job because you're frustrated, you're no longer counted as part of the labor force, and that makes the reported unemployment rate look better. The same is true about the way the inflation rate is calculated. In fact, Mr. Kranzier discusses that in his article as well. He says the reason the government wants to present a decline in its GDP, his gross domestic product deflator, is that it has the mathematical effect of converting real gross domestic product into a higher number than nominal. So if the inflation-adjusted gross domestic product is lower, real GDP or real economic growth will be reported as higher. I know this is confusing, but understanding the reality of what's going on in the economy and the reality of what might be happening in the markets, we believe is key to managing your nest egg properly in the months and years ahead. We do offer educational resources to help you out, to get you some additional information, maybe just offer you a different perspective. We do have a new retirement rules class coming up on September the 12th. If you'd like information on that, visit the website newretirementrules.com to get more information. And we do have some Social Security maximization workshops. These are free dinner workshops that we're holding in the area. We've got two in August, August 18 at Stonewater Country Club, and August 25 at the Highlands Golf Club. For more information on those Social Security maximization free dinner workshops, go to socialsecuritydinner.com. The website, socialsecuritydinner.com. I'll be back with Harry Dent after these words.
Give me your money, just give me money.
That's the way you do it. Money for nothing and your chicks for free. Welcome back to the Everything Financial Radio program. I'm your host, Dennis Tubergen. I will be continuing my conversation with our special guest today, Mr. Harry Dent, in the next segment. You know, this past week, the Federal Reserve, or to be more accurate, the Federal Open Market Committee met and elected not to raise interest rates once again, as we have been talking about here on the Everything Financial Radio program for some time. And I want to give you just a bit from their July 29 press release. In that press release, it begins by saying, information received since the Federal Open Market Committee met in June indicates that economic activity has been expanding moderately in recent months. Growth in household spending has been moderate, and the housing sector has shown additional improvement. However, business fixed investment and net exports stayed soft. Let's look at the areas that did well, according to the Fed's press release. The housing sector was one area that the Fed said was strong. Going back to what we talk about when we discuss the concept of economic seasons, housing is doing well because housing is really debt-driven consumption. A couple months ago here on the program, I talked about the fact that there was an article published in the Wall Street Journal titled The Return of the 3% Mortgage, the Return of the 3% Down Mortgage. Little or no money down mortgages are back, makes it easier for folks to buy homes. In fact, when you take a look at the level of debt that is now being added in the housing sector, we believe that this is purely a debt-driven area of consumption. The other area that the Fed says is doing quite well is household spending. Again, debt-driven consumption. Now, there is a Reuters article that was published this past week, actually one day after the Fed's press release came out. And the Reuters article began by talking about the fact that U.S. economic growth accelerated in the second quarter as solid consumer spending offset the drag from weak business spending on equipment. That is actually right out of the Fed's press release. The article says that suggests that the Federal Reserve could be closer to hiking interest rates this year. I will go on record as saying that they will not do it in September, as many are predicting. I have made that same prediction earlier this year, as a lot of analysts said that the Fed would raise rates by summer. Well, now that's not happening, and I predict that won't happen in September either, for reasons that I will talk about. What I really want to focus on, though, is the measure of economic growth, because the Reuters article talks about the fact, and I'm quoting again from the article, gross domestic product expanded at a 2.3% annual rate. That's according to the Commerce Department. First quarter GDP, or gross domestic product, previously was reported as to have shrunk at a 0.2% pace, was now revised to show that it was rising at a 0.6% rate. Now, why did this revision happen? Why did the reported level of economic growth go from negative economic growth or contraction to positive economic growth, even though it was only a 0.6% rate? But that's a big swing. Why did this happen? Well, there was a blog written by Mr. Dave Kranzier that I thought did a nice job explaining this. And I am going to give you a bit of a paraphrase from Mr. Kranzier's writing here. He started by saying, I guess the new policy regarding the presentation of economic data that has been implemented by the government is if you don't like the way data is reported, you change the way data is reported, or you change the methodology by which you gather the data. He continues by saying, after all, The media will zero in on the newly fabricated statistics, rather strong language, and that will become the Orwellian truth. Besides, the public doesn't care. Now, you know something has changed by the government when the press release announcing the results contains several paragraphs explaining how the revisions work. Now, let me give you an example of this press release. A new aggregate, in other words, a new metric, a new measuring stick. The average of GDP and GDI is a supplemental measure of U.S. economic activity. In real or inflation-adjusted terms, this measure increased 0.5% in the first quarter of 2015. So that's how this 0.2% real decline in GDP is now considered to be a 0.6% gain. Now, when you look at the other data, it's hard to figure out how there was really an economic gain in the first quarter. In fact, when you take a look at factory orders and retail sales, which make up the majority of gross domestic product, and when you think about factory orders and retail sales, another way to talk about that is manufacturing and consumption. Those are the two components of gross domestic product except for government spending. Well, factory orders have been declining since early to mid-2014, and they've declined to levels not seen since 2008 at the financial crisis. When you look at consumption, the year-over-year retail sales number also declined. So if those two numbers declined, how can you possibly have negative economic growth or consumption revised to show that there was actually economic growth? And the answer is that the metric is changed. The metric has changed. This has happened time and time again whenever economic data doesn't look as good as maybe someone would like it to look. The unemployment rate has changed significantly over the years. I should say the way the unemployment rate is calculated has changed significantly over the years. It used to be if you were working part-time but wanted to work full-time, you were considered to be unemployed. You were counted among those who were unemployed. If you weren't working, you were considered to be unemployed. Now, if you've quit looking for a job because you're frustrated, you're no longer counted as part of the labor force. And that makes the reported unemployment rate look better. The same is true about the way the inflation rate is calculated. In fact, Mr. Kranzier discusses that in his article as well. He says the reason the government wants to present a decline in its GDP, its gross domestic product deflator, is that it has the mathematical effect of converting real gross domestic product into a higher number than nominal. So if the inflation-adjusted gross domestic product is lower, real GDP or real economic growth will be reported as higher. I know this is confusing, but understanding the reality of what's going on in the economy and the reality of what might be happening in the markets, we believe is key to managing your nest egg properly in the months and years ahead. We do offer educational resources to help you out, to get you some additional information, maybe just to offer you a different perspective. We do have a new retirement rules class coming up on September the 12th. If you'd like information on that, visit the website newretirementrules.com to get more information. And we do have some Social Security maximization workshops. These are free dinner workshops that we're holding in the area. We've got two in August, August 18 at Stonewater Country Club, and August 25 at the Highlands Golf Club. For more information on those Social Security maximization free dinner workshops, go to socialsecuritydinner.com. The website, socialsecuritydinner.com. I'll be back with Harry Dent after these words.
Give me your money, just give me money.
Welcome back to the Everything Financial Radio program. I'm your host, Dennis Tubergen. I have the pleasure today of chatting with Harry Dent. Harry is a best-selling author many times over. His latest book is The Demographic Cliff. And Harry, before we jump back into our conversation, just give the listeners a bit of an overview of the book, The Demographic Cliff.
Well, you know, we look at demographics in the United States and around the world, how projectable it is when different countries are going to grow, and Europe, Japan went off the cliff first in the 90s, which we predicted in the late 80s, and then U.S., and now Europe's going to go off the cliff, and more countries are going to see their baby boom spending decline, and it's going to take many, many years before the next generation comes along, the echo boom, to pick up the slack. And in countries like Southern Europe and Central Europe, especially Germany, and Italy and Greece and Spain and Portugal, those countries have horrible demographics, worse than the Japanese had in the 90s. So we start there. We look at bubbles throughout history and how they form, and everybody always says there is not a bubble. We look at real estate and very important insights into real estate, not just that real estate peaked a long time ago for the baby boom generation, but there's something, Dennis, that's never happened in history, and that is a smaller generation following a larger one. When the baby boomers start dying in droves, which they're going to be in the next 2 to 3 decades, there's going to be more baby boomers dying than young people coming along buying houses. We will not need more housing, and housing will, that chapter is called Real Estate Will Never Be the Same, that we're going to have to go back to monopoly, where you buy real estate for positive cash flow and rents, or because, you know, you want to avoid and own the home and live in it. You don't buy homes to get rich anymore. That it's going to be over with the baby boom generation. And again, we've never had this. This already happened in Japan. Japan saw a 60% crash in the 90s in real estate, and real estate has never bounced 25 years later because there's more older people in Japan dying than young people buying. This is massive impact on infrastructures in the future, and this is so projectable, but nobody's going to see it coming. So we really just look every angle possible to inform investors and business people. You can see the most important trends over the rest of your lifetime. I can't call every little stock correction and crash and political pafu and stuff like that, but we can tell you when there's going to be growth or not anywhere in the world, decades in advance, so you can plan your life. And this is one of those times where you need to protect your investments, because we're going to go into a multi-year downturn, just like we did in the 30s, just like we did in the 70s. This happens once a generation. Nobody sees it coming unless you look at demographics like we do, but it's as predictable as can be. And people need to protect their assets. Stocks are going to go down and not come back for a long time. Real estate is going to go down and not come back for a long time. So you've got to cash in on the bubble now. Because when bubbles burst, as we just saw with China, they burst rapidly. I mean, China, you know, the tech bubble, 40% in the first 2.5 months. The 1929 bubble in the U.S. was down 40% in a couple of months. So you don't really have a chance to get out or wait for it to happen. You have to get out in advance.
Well, if the listeners would like to get a free copy of the Demographic Cliff, you can go to harrydent.com and just pay shipping and handling, and the Dent organization will send you a copy. Harry, let me just jump in and go back to something that you commented on. You used the term depression. That is a very ominous term. For the average 401k investor and homeowner with a mortgage, a couple of kids at home they want to put through college, how are the coming economic events, in your view, going to affect that person?
Well, basically, here's the thing, and this only happens once in a lifetime, a depression. It happens, it follows a credit and a financial asset bubble, just like the Roaring 20s. So nobody alive today has seen a depression. We don't even know what it means, except we heard about it. What it means, Dennis, is that all assets go down. All financial assets, they bubble up, they're funded by credit, you know, rapid credit growth, you greet these bubbles, and then everything, high-yield bonds, real estate, commodities, stocks, there's nowhere to hide. In the 70s, you could have been in real estate or Japanese stocks or emerging markets or commodities and done fine when everything else went down, but everything went down in the 30s except the highest quality bonds. So you have to preserve your money, get out of the bubble, be in safe, high-quality fixed income investments, the highest quality bonds, corporate and treasury, and don't look for high yields. Don't chase these junk bonds, and don't chase real estate or stocks in this bubble. You got to protect your assets and wait for things to crash and then reinvest. You can't sit through this, is what we're saying. And everything, diversification is not going to protect you. It didn't protect in 2008 because real estate, gold, silver, stocks, bond, everything went down. And that's why people were so shell-shocked. So that this is going to happen more. We're just going to get a bigger dose because governments have blown up the bubble higher to try to kick the can down the road, as they always do. And now we're just going to have a bigger bubble. We have more debt, $57 trillion more debt globally than we had at the top of the last crisis. And we've got stocks and a lot of financial assets higher than ever. It just means we're going to have a bigger burst. So you have to get out of the way. It's that simple. Get out of the way.
So, Harry, let me just ask you, do you have, and I know picking tops and bottoms and turning points in the stock market is a tricky thing, but what's your take on when the U.S. stock market maybe catches up with the Chinese market and the Brazilian market that you mentioned in the last segment?
Well, you know, I think this is coming soon. I think we may have seen a peak recently. We're in a correction now. We'll probably get a bounce, you know, in August. And then we're looking at late August is probably the last chance to get out because the crash season is typically, you know, late August through mid-October. If stocks are going to do something wild, that's when it usually happens annually. And the fact that this China bubble has already taken a big hit says to me this is going to start happening around the world. So I'd say, you know, be out of stocks now and or on any bounce in August, but do not be in the stock market from late August forward.
Harry, you know, the central banks around the world, and let's focus particularly on the U.S. central bank, the Federal Reserve, tried to react after the financial crisis by engaging in quantitative easing, basically just money printing. Are they going to try that again? And if they do, what is the risk to the U.S. currency, the dollar?
Well, you know, the dollar has actually gone up since the crisis began in early 2008. It's gone up in the downturn. And when gold and silver went down, and it's gone up even in the recovery off and on, the dollar has ended up being the safe haven. We created more dollars in this global bubble boom than any other currency. So when we deflate and deleverage, more dollars are going to be destroyed. Paradoxically, and this is the hardest thing I have to convince people of, makes the dollar more valuable. And every time we've had a crisis, the dollar has gone up, as it has recently, and gold, which everybody thinks can protect you, has gone down. So it's very important to understand that. Again, if you look at history, when there is deleveraging, you get deflation in prices, and deflation in prices favors holding cash and cash flow investments, and it's for currency, like the U.S. dollar. So high-quality bonds, cash, you got to have money to take advantage when things suddenly deleverage, and that's what Joseph did in 1929. I mean, he sold at the top, got out, you know, got out of the bubble, and then rebought businesses, stocks, everything, you know, 10, 20 cents a dollar. That's how you get rich overnight. But you get out of the way, because if you're in the bubble, when everything collapses, so do your assets, and then you don't have anything to take advantage of it with, because everything went down. Your real estate went down. Your house is underwater. You can't borrow money. You can't refinance. Your stocks went down 60, 70, 80, 90%. Oh, my gosh, we thought those stocks were safe. No, they're not. All stocks went down in the 1930s. Utilities, Coca-Cola, you know, consumer staples, booze, everything went down because you have this great reset. And that's what people don't understand. Everything gets reset back to normal, and that takes a one-time hit across markets, and it just wipes out people's wealth.
Well, we apologize to listeners for a little bit of audio distortion. We are talking today with Mr. Harry Dent, who's the author of The Demographic Cliff. You can get a free copy of the book by visiting the website harrydent.com. Harry, recently we saw banks shuttered in Greece. It was reminiscent of what we saw a couple years ago in Cyprus. Is this the beginning of a trend around the world, given that we're going to see this deflationary period, as you predict? That'll obviously affect the balance sheets of banks. What do you think we're going to see moving ahead as far as the banking sector goes?
Yeah, I mean, I think we tell people you need to have as much of your money possible in a brokerage account at a bank or brokerage firm that's in your name. You don't want it sitting as just a deposit in a bank, except for what you need to do business daily, monthly sort of thing. Because banks lend money, especially in real estate and mortgages, and when they fail enough, sometimes they don't have your money to give you. They say, hey, your money's on, hey, here's your deposit, right? You have $100,000, and then, yep, oops, but try to draw it out. We can't pay you because we're losing too much money on loans on a 10-to-1 leverage basis. So banks only keep 10% reserves against their loans. So you get a real estate route, like I'm talking, where real estate's down 30, 40, 50%. And these banks are in trouble. So you don't want your money sitting in a checking account or savings account. Have it in your own brokerage account under your name, because they can't lend against that.
Well, great advice, great advice. And Harry, I want to go back and revisit something you said in an earlier segment. You mentioned that Europe now is going to be falling off the demographic cliff. And in particular, you mentioned Germany. Can you expand on that?
Yeah. In the late 80s, we were the only people that saw the collapse of Japan. We said, hey, in the 90s, the U.S. and Europe are going to have their best decade stock market economy ever because of the strong baby boom spending, and the opposite for Japan. Baby boom, Japan's baby boom will be done. Its real estate bubble and stock bubble are going to burst, and Japan's going to go through, you know, a decade and a half of a collapse. And people thought we were nuts. It was just demographics. Japan had a major baby boom, even bigger than us, and a big baby bust that came along, you know, two decades before ours. Well, now ours hit in 2008 forward, and Germany has the worst demographics in the next 8 years of any country in the world, and most of Europe is weak, especially southern Europe, and countries like Austria. So central and southern Europe have the worst demographics, especially Germany. And everybody just thinks Germany's solid. Germany's doing well because they export 40 to 50% of their GDP, huge exports, and the euro's been falling for years. It went from 160 down to 104. If it weren't for that falling euro, Germany would already be in demographic trouble. Their exports are strong, but their internal economy is the weakest in the world demographically. And that weakness, a similar level of weakness, was able to tank Japan in a decade of the 90s when the rest of the world had the greatest boom in history. So that's, you can't fight demographics. When your workforce is shrinking, and it's already shrinking in Germany, shrinking like crazy in Japan, Greece, all those other countries, Greece is never going to get better. They're in debt, and their demographics just get worse. Same with Italy, same with Spain, same with Portugal. None of these countries are ever going to be able to come out of this with poor demographic trends. And nobody's willing. They have to write off these debts. Greece is just not going to be able to pay their 200% of GDP in debt. They're not going to be able to do it, ever.
Well, we're going to have to leave it there. Our guest today has been Mr. Harry Dent, author of The Demographic Cliff. You can get a free copy of the book by visiting harrydent.com. Harry, always a pleasure to have you on. Thanks for joining us today.
Okay. Enjoyed it, Dennis.
We will return after these words. Stay with us.